Good morning and welcome. Live radio, hey, is back. And the auto DJ is down for the count for a while. This is WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. We also refer to ourselves as Tufts Educational Radio and Tufts Freeform Commercial Free, yay, community-based radio. And you're about to hear 2 hours of socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. With your co-hosts today are myself, Jeff, and
Diego.
And your mic doesn't seem to be working, Diego. Why not? Try that again.
Hello?
Nope. I don't hear anything. I don't hear the mic. Can you turn up something there, the volume? Try again.
Hello?
Oh. It's mic 4. You got mic 4?
Yeah, mic 4.
Should be working.
Hello?
I'm not sure it's working, Diego. Let me try one more time. Sorry.
Testing? No.
I don't think it's working. And I have no idea why.
Mic 3?
No, I think you're on 4. You're on mic 4. Oh boy, oh boy. Okay. Anyway, this is Sunday, October 7th, and we're gonna start Social Alternative Radio.
Hello?
Try that again. Try that one.
Mic check.
No. What people are hearing, they're hearing you, but they're hearing you in like you're far away.
Yeah.
Try 4 one more time.
Hello?
I don't know why it's not working. Go ahead and try one more time.
Mic check.
hold on. Let me try something. Try it now.
Mic check.
There we go. Hey. I pressed the right button, and now you have a buzzing sound for some reason. That's irritating as heck. Why is it doing that? Try again.
Mic check. Okay.
There's some sort of buzzing sound in the background, so we're going to have to switch mics in a minute. Actually, maybe we'll do that right now. We're going to throw some music on, try to deal with our little technical difficulty here. We apologize to listeners that are tuned in. We'll be back as soon as possible. And again, you'll see WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. And we could really use an engineer on our show, but we don't have one. Thanks a lot. And and we'll take you into this song real quick. Let's see. Yeah, Gil Scott here, and who, that's good. The revolution will not be televised by Gil Scott Heron.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
Now that's irritating. We're going to cut the song off, the wonderful Gil Scott Heron in his song, because we have to try something else with this this problem we're having. Now try your mic.
Sorry.
Try
Hello?
4.
Hello?
Nope. And try again.
Hello?
Nope. Okay. Try one more time.
Mic check.
Try again.
Mic check.
Yeah, we're still getting that background noise. So we're going to pull again, and we're going to do a song, and we'll be right back. Sorry for all the garbage here.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lights of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised.
And there we go, interrupting Gil Scott here, and once again, we apologize, but we have a new thing here. We're going to try this mic. Go ahead, Diego.
Mic check.
Ah, brilliant. Perfect. Yes, we fixed it. All right. Yay. You wouldn't believe, I'm so proud of myself, because I'm not an engineer, and we fixed this problem. So you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, and you hear the sirens. They're coming to get us.
It's murder by capitalism.
Yeah, Diego has a whole
That's
new...
That's been my theme for the last couple of weeks ago.
New theme for the show, murder by capitalism.
I said to myself, death. That's too light of a word. It's murder.
Well, you know, on Facebook, someone has a page I'm signed on to, or whatever you call it, to a ton of pages on Facebook. What do you call that? I've friended a ton of pages on Facebook. Facebook, and one of them is Capitalism Kills. And it's a pretty high level of content. I like it. But anyway, what you mean by this, Diego, is we're going to talk about... And by the way, this show, Social Alternative Radio, Talk and Music from a Working Class Democratic Socialist Perspective, goes out... Thank you, Somerville, for all the background noise. Yay.
It's probably another gas leak.
Yeah. Well, we talk about things affecting working class people, as you can tell from the subhead, the subtitle, etc. But we are today going to get into something that's happening locally. But this show does go out even internationally, obviously, over the computer. You go to WMFO.org. And you can listen from anywhere in the world, live streaming, or go to archives at WMFO.org, listen to the last one or two of our shows. You could go to Fenian Rising on Facebook, F-E-N-I-A-N, and then Rising, and they have downloaded a lot of our shows. I don't know if they're still doing that, but they did for a long time. Thank you, Fenian Rising, by the way.
Are they still on Facebook?
They're on Facebook.
I try to find them...
On the web?
On the web, they're no longer...
Yeah, yeah.
Facebook.
I think it's Facebook, okay. Yeah. But today we're gonna go a bit local at the beginning of today's show, and talk about Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Lawrence Maverick area.
Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Over by North Andover.
Yeah.
Also,
this is part of Massachusetts, considered sort of North Shore in a way, or North. Yeah. Lawrence is close to New Hampshire. Yeah. Lawrence, Massachusetts. It's a city that's famous for the 1912 Bread and Roses strike, where workers of many nationalities, immigrant workers being exploited, plus non-immigrant workers at the time, being exploited terribly by bosses going on strike for or demanding higher wages. Higher wages finally given after a long time, but the bosses then took away hours.
Also child labor.
Child labor was happening, horrible conditions in textile mills in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and other places. So the workers of Lawrence in their thousands, maybe even tens of thousands, I'm not sure what the numbers were off the top of my head, they got together and did a strike to get their pay back and make some improvements. And the companies and the state went nuts on them, basically, and tried to literally shoot them back to work and bayonet them back to work. And it got so dangerous, the workers tried to send their kids to other cities, like Helen Keller, for example, a well-known disabled activist and writer, who is also, by the way, a socialist. A lot of people don't know that. She spoke at Madison Square Garden, along with other famous socialists at the time, in defense of the Lawrence strikers. There was some sort of a hearing in Congress or something about it. Basically, socialists at the time made it a huge cause to do solidarity with the strike. And as the children, by the way, were being shipped out to other cities, they were attacked by the National Guard, I believe it was. It might have been some sort of militia or cops, but I think it was National Guard, to try to prevent them because it was looking bad. And they were attacking children and stuff. Yeah, the Pinkertons were in there. And a long story short, we could have a whole show on the brilliant Bread and Roses strike. Long story short, the strikers prevailed with the help of socialists and radicals in the IWW. And others, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn and Joseph Eto, I think was his name, and others, they went and helped on the ground at the strike, and the union won a huge, huge victory in the Lawrence textile worker strike in 1912, also known as the Bread and Roses strike, because mostly women workers, and they had a huge percentage of women workers, and they developed a song. I don't know if it already existed or not, or it came out of the strike, but it was called Bread and Roses. And it was basically saying, we want bread, meaning decent wages, benefits and so on, and decent working conditions. We want roses too, which is a decent life, you know, a life that we can enjoy. And working 14 hours in a textile mill destroys your life as far as enjoyment goes. Maybe you can survive if you're lucky. But anyway, so now fast forward to Lawrence today, and it is still a town of immigrants, mostly, and but a very poor town. The thing that we're about to describe happened in Lawrence, Massachusetts, but other richer towns too, like Andover strikes me as kind of a rich town.
Yeah.
Or parts of it at least.
Yeah, it's kind of like Methuen.
Yeah.
Which is close. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the suburbs of you know, of Lawrence.
Yeah, and we're near Foxborough too. This Patriot Stadium is up there somewhere. I don't think they got affected, but it's up there, isn't it? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's somewhere else.
My Massachusetts, more south.
Yeah, right? I think it's south. Yeah, my Massachusetts geography suddenly bit the dust, but it used to be good. We used to go to Lawrence every Labor Day, set up a socialist alternative table there.
I think the Pats played next to Attleboro, which is more south.
Yeah, Foxborough, south. That's south, totally. I got mixed up. So anyway, north is Andover. So mostly poor people affected, but a lot of so-called middle class, meaning working class, and poor is working class for us too. And then upper middle class people, including businesses, some businesses affected, because what happened is that Lawrence, one day, it was a nice day, I remember, one day you start hearing over the radio or the TV, whatever media you're looking at, there was a huge accident, explosion. Yeah. That started fires. It was a gas leak explosion started by a company called Columbia?
Yes.
Columbia Gas.
And a part of this big conglomerate that they call in the Ambit Group / what they call it. That was the other, the National Grid, which is part of this.
Oh, National Grid's part of that? I didn't know that.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh, yeah. This is a big group now. They call it Ambit Group, where it's just like getting all these people, oh, yeah, invest in this. We're growing. We're about.
Well,
once National Grid gets there, trust me.
Let me do a little digression here, because one of the things in my life that's causing a lot of stress, and I mean that
energy
more than stress, is the cost of electricity. It has shot up like crazy. We spent the summer with two little window air conditioners. It was a fairly hot summer, working when it got really hot. That shot our gas bill up from about 140 to over to 250. The worst one was after August happened. We had a $250 gas bill. When I sit down and write out a check for $250, that's stressing everything. That means the whole domino effect of someone like we're a typical American family, we're deep in debt and so on. That just starts everything. What's not going to get paid? What's going to happen? It was horrible.
And it's less for food. This is less for that.
Yeah, just before
less for recreation.
Just before the show, I opened up the bill for the following month, and I thought it was going to be really low because we didn't use AC at all. It was still 149. Or no, I'm sorry, 190 something. So it only went down like $50 or $60. And it's supposed to be down around, like I said, 140, 135. And even that's way too high. So my point is here, there is an incredible ripoff going on. This stuff should be free, first of all. It's basic power that everybody needs. And they privatized a lot of this stuff, deregulated a lot of this stuff from the 70s, 60s, and so on, especially in the 80s, late 70s, 80s. The Democrats under Carter, by the way, deregulated utilities. We're suffering from that now horribly. It used to be much cheaper to heat or cool your house. And on top of that, now it's extremely dangerous, because what we're describing in Lawrence is this huge gas explosion. That it's kind of old news around here now, but they still report on it, because here we are in.
There's still people
homeless. When did it happen again? What was the date it happened? You remember? I don't remember either. September something?
September, like late September, mid-September.
Yeah, so September.
Happened around Thursday, Wednesday night to Thursday morning.
So it happened in September. Here we are in October, and people still don't have their gas coming in, which means no hot water. No cooking for a lot of them, no heat, right? Imagine trying to live that way. I don't think it affects electricity, but...
No.
That, you know...
Columbia, you know what they did? They said, oh, yeah, we're giving away electric heat, you know, those electric...
space heaters. Space. Really dangerous.
No. The electric for cooking.
Hot plates.
Hot plates.
Yeah. Hot plates and space heaters.
Oh, that's a solution.
Both very dangerous. Yeah. Both, things you associate, or I associate with... with when I was using space heaters and hot plates, I was dirt poor. Now I'm just like on the edge, you know. But when I was like really, really didn't have any money, that's the kind of stuff I would do, you know. When I didn't have to worry about pipes freezing. When my family, we finally got a house, 5 or 6 years ago, and this new I discovered a new thing I never really understood. You have to run your heat or your pipes will freeze in the winter, and the cost of heating is so high that you're stuck in this bind. Like, I would mind. I would sit there and freeze to death, practically, and although I have kids, so that wouldn't work either. But I would let our house be really, really cold, but you can't risk having the pipes freeze, because if that happens, they burst.
The infrastructure of your house isn't affected now.
Yeah, exactly. If the pipes burst and you have flooding, and you have no heat next time you turn it on, et cetera, et cetera. So this is this whole energy thing. And, you know, back in the, I'm old enough, I remember as a child in the 70s and even into the 80s, there was, and Ralph Nader was involved in a lot of this with the PERG organizations, and I think they still exist, but there was a lot of political agitation around things like utility costs. And even as they were deregulating, there was... Some people fought against that, but before deregulation, they fought to even have more regulation, have lower bills. There are cities in the United States that the utilities are run by the cities. They're not part of a larger grid some people have fought in those cities to keep the rates low. So it really varies around the country how much you're paying into electricity, but most people are paying a lot more now.
Jeff, how is it in? I've been to your places like Portugal, Azores, where I've seen the bills. Nothing compared to you.
Yeah.
Even on the euro.
Yeah.
Cheap. There'll be months that they don't, you didn't use much? Okay, you don't get charged. I said, wow. That's totally different from, you know, the U.S.
Yep. That's, it is. And, but it changes in Europe. See,
I know every country is different. You know what I mean?
I haven't done any traveling for a long time. France. Yeah, I've been able to, I used to travel cheap when I was younger. I can't do that anymore. And I, haven't traveled for a while. You have traveled a lot more than me recently. I think what my memories of like France and Portugal and other places I went to, it was cheaper. The thing about when I was living in France for a short time and when I traveled back there is that life for the everyday working class person was a lot better. It's completely, the American dream is a complete myth. You want a dream? Try the European dream. Because if you have education virtually paid for, if you have healthcare paid for, if you have your heating a lot lower, you actually have money to spend to go and I'm not saying it's perfect. There's still huge inequalities and huge injustices, and it's capitalism still. So it still has to be overthrown. You still have to have a better system. You still have to have socialism, democratic socialism. But as living under capitalism, it's a better, compared to the United States, a better life for the average working person. Now, that might have changed in the last 20 years because it was never static. The minute I was sitting there admiring the French healthcare system, right, even down to the level of pharmacy, where you walk in, you have a highly trained pharmacist, almost like a doctor in terms of what they know, and giving you stuff very, very cheap or even handing it to you for free because they have that mindset that healthcare is not for profit. That has possibly changed. You know, you have this guy Macron in there. You had Sarkozy in power in France, the equivalent of Trump's in power, the equivalent of Reagan's in power since I've been there. And they could have cut this stuff to bits for all I know. You know, I'm not up on the latest comparative factors of healthcare. I know that in Britain, which I'm more familiar with, through the Committee for Workers International, you know, that's Socialist Alternatives and Political Solidarity with the Committee for Workers International. And there's a large section of the Committee for Workers International in Britain, and they talk about defending the National Health Service there because whether it's the Tories or the conservative Labour governments that have been in power, like under Blair and so on, they cut the National Health Service as much as they could. And they tried to set up a parallel service for rich people. And they say there's no money for the healthcare service and all this stuff. So there's a big fight going on over this national healthcare service that's much, much better than our system. Even as it's under attack, it's still a lot better. So it's all relative, you know. Mm. So on electricity and all that, I don't know. But I'm just saying, what I started to say earlier is that when there was a mass movement in the United States in the 1960s and 70s, starting against the Vietnam War, but then spreading out to all sorts of issues like women's rights, environmental protection, getting out of the war, obviously, and then students' rights. I mean, you could, I mean, just created it. Just the anger against the war and against the draft created this radical wave that touched all sorts of Stonewall in 69, gay rights. This thing just really, really exploded into many, many, all aspects of U.S. society in a lot of ways, not everywhere. And the labor movement had a conservative, very conservative leadership then in the United States. They never really got that heavily involved, although there were a lot of strikes and there were some unions that got radicalized. Overall, labor was considered a conservative force. They were voting Democrat, supporting the Democrats consistently, which, you know, for example, when McGovern ran, a Democrat that was, you know, considered progressive, although he wasn't as progressive as people think, but he was definitely anti-war. When McGovern ran for president, I think it was 68, I have to double check the year, you actually had labor leaders like Lane Kirkland and so on, head of the FCO, saying, oh, McGovern's too left, quote unquote, which he really wasn't. We're going to vote for Nixon. Can you, I mean, can you believe that? I mean, just like, I mean, bad enough voting Democrat and working with the Democrats if you're a labor leader, because it's a capitalist party, right? But here we had, like, within the this capitalist party, they're not even right-wing enough for the labor movement, whereas in other countries, the labor movement was quite left-wing and so on. So the labor movement never got heavily involved in these mass protests. But what I'm trying to explain is that a lot of people that didn't live through this, when you have a truly mass movement, which we haven't had in this country since the 60s and 70s, I'm not talking about big movements. I'm not talking about one-off protests like the women's marches that have happened in the last two women's marches that have happened within the last couple of years have been huge, right? But they aren't a sustained movement yet, and partially because the Democrats don't want them to be. They just say vote Democrat and everything gets shoved into
that's
that.
Like Occupy.
Yeah, that Occupy. Still not a mass movement though, but Occupy was very, very important. It broke the seal, so to speak, in the mass media on talking about inequality. And we've talked about that on the show before. That remember the, I don't know if you remember when Occupy started to break, but
yeah,
it was a summertime.
It was September's.
Yeah, well, but during the summer before that, all I was hearing on the radio, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but not too much. All I was hearing on the radio and seeing on TV is this relentless propaganda of all things against Greece, because Greece wasn't going to go along. This was when Syriza was really radical in political left political party in Greece. When they were not obeying the European Central Bank and the Eurozone to cut drastically living standards in Greece in order to pay money to the bank, the big Euro bank, Euro Central Bank, European Central Bank, when the Greek working class through Syriza was actually fighting back, every story was how horrible that was and how wonderful the Germans were, so efficient and pay their debts and all that. I was like, what world is this? And around us, of course, are people living from the effects of the Great Recession is still lingering on from 2007, 2008. This is only like 2012, Occupy, right? Around 2012?
11.
11, 12.
Yeah.
And what I see around me, what everyone else sees around me, if you're a worker, is people not doing well at all. And what is all this crap I'm hearing about Greece, you know? And I'm good for them. I don't want them. Why should they pay banks anything, you know?
Iceland did what they did.
Yeah.
They didn't get much grief that Greece did.
They survived, yeah.
And they survived.
Yeah.
They actually showed an example to Greece. You can do this.
Yeah.
You know?
But what I was going to say was also that, so Occupy starts up, and for the first few weeks, of course, as socialists and social alternative and all that, and a lot of other radicals are talking about Occupy and participating in it. I went down there. I mean, a lot of people were down there in Boston, for example, down around South Station to Occupy, main Occupy encampment, all that. And we're not hearing anything in the media at first. It took like 2 weeks. And all these things, big things are happening, big protests, you know, and so on. And finally, it breaks through the media. And then the media, of course, has its own conservative spin on it, but there's so much pressure, so many big things happening that finally a little bit of talk about inequality starts to seep into even the corporate media. And of course, Occupy as a movement energizes people that are protesting and talking about inequality and talking about capitalism being unfair. And it turns into sort of somewhat of an anti-capitalist movement. Never got its act together. That's a whole other story. Never took on a political way forward. Anarchists really wrecked it. But, you know, Occupy did have an effect, did have a big effect. But even if you add up all of Occupy and really talk about it and really study it, it's not a mass movement. It was not a mass movement. A real mass movement, like the anti-war movement in against Vietnam, triggered by the draft, infused by the civil rights movement, the Black Power movement, and other things going on at the time, and then initiating other things out of it, was true. I mean, really reached into every part of the country. I mean, you could have conservative areas that didn't participate much, but it would still affect them. The draft, for example, from the government would affect every 18-year-old male in the country. You had to decide, do I roll the dice on the draft? And how do you not roll the dice to, oh, I can get a college deferment, I should go to college. You know, I didn't want to, but I will now. can I get a medical deferment? Do I know a doctor? Do I know a civilian doctor?
Should I stab myself or something like that?
Because the war was insanely unjust. But also some people didn't know that and just went into the war, and they were educated quick about how stupid it was and how wrong it was. And there was a huge troop revolt. What I'm trying to say is a truly mass movement has not happened since then. But part of what happened then also was these things that didn't seem to be directly related, but they were infused by the questioning, by the protests at the time. And that included protests against high energy costs, high electrical costs, high, the PIRG movement, Public Interest Research Group, started, I think, by Ralph Nader and others, spread around the country, especially on college campuses. And they had a kind of community organizing thing in their heads, which had a lot of problems, but it brought them out into the community to try to get people that might even be conservative interested in questioning parts of the system based on their own self-interest, right? What are you talking about? You look like a hippie, but you're talking about, like, you're from a college, but you're talking about lower electrical bills? I'll sign on, because my electrical bill just shot up, you know? And so it was
like
all about
my bread and butter issues that everybody, that even a conservative would be like, my bill went up, you know.
So here we are, though, 2018, and there's no mass movement. There's, of course, very significant protests happening, and in some ways the political climate is a lot better, that more people are identifying as anti-capitalist, more people are identifying as socialist, even if they're not really, but some are. And that's very positive. Even under Trump, we can win victories, and even under Trump, we can build for the future movements against capitalism. But it's still not a mass movement situation, and hasn't been for a while. And a lot of things get left behind. You know, when you have that mass movement, it infuses everything. And people say, "I need this, 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 and this." Now people are trying to acclimate themselves, trying to survive to things that used to be challenged and now aren't. I'll give you another example: childcare costs. Childcare, daycare costs are insanely expensive. One of the things that happened during the women's movement in the 60s and 70s was to attack that, to call for, and they weren't even as expensive then, but to call for decent daycare, subsidized daycare, free daycare, daycare in the workplace, all these demands. That continued into the 80s, even when we were organizing the union at Harvard originally. It was daycare, dental, and dignity, something like that was one of our slogans. And the idea then was to have on-site daycare at Harvard, one of the biggest employers, quote-unquote, in Massachusetts, to have on-site daycare. Now, that demand was dropped by a very conservative union leadership that developed out of the Harvard union movement. And they, to this day, they're very business unionist. They did get some gains on, you can get some money back, in our experience, in my family, about a fifth of what you need, or maybe a little more. You get some money back if you fill out some forms, and it's sort of a pool of money that, you know, can run out or can increase a little depending on the year. But a lot of what you spend is still not covered. But out there, if you're not in a union, of course, you have nothing like that. And that's better than nothing, by the way, that subsidy. But if you're out not in a union and you don't have any kind of subsidy or free daycare or subsidized daycare, at your workplace or whatever, you're dead in the water, you know. And so for us, even being in a union, it was extremely hard, extremely expensive to have childcare. For the average American that has a family, it's just really, really expensive. And do you hear anything in the corporate media? Do you see protests about childcare expenses? No.
It's right? Not even in the radar.
Yeah, it's not on anyone's radar. Same thing with energy costs, you know. There's no protest against it, and it's killer. It's killer. I get those bills, and I shudder. I'm like, this is horrible. And you can point to many, many different issues in America right now that there's nothing happening about. And they're so important. The environment, 2 years ago, or about 2 years ago, there was a big environmental march. It was in the consciousness. That has retreated drastically. And I'm not blaming the people. I'm blaming people that get involved in politics and dump all their politics in the Democratic Party. That's who I blame. Progressives that then turn everything to Democrats, you know, and don't build movements independent of the Democrats and Republicans. Don't try to build a third party for working people. That's who I blame. Of course, you have to blame the big business people, Democrat or Republican or whatever as well, for causing the problems. But the point is that there's so much that goes unnoticed, unfought. And so this is a bad time for Lawrence to get hit by this thing. You, by the way, you said you knew the cause of it.
My cousin lives there. He's right now with his girlfriend in Haverhill, which is farther north. Well, they didn't say anything in the media, but according to one of the fire chiefs, it was just a simple maybe 10,000, 25,000 pressure valve that could have stopped the situation. Kind of like BP with their, you know, that one piece that they didn't install that cost $50,000, and then it ruptured. Boom.
So here in Lawrence, the gas pipes rupture. Now you got to understand the pipes go into everybody's houses that has gas, and that caused explosions in many houses.
Yep, a whole neighborhood, literally.
Well, some places had small fires, some had big fires.
Now, if you weren't connected to Columbia, your house was safe, but still, your house is next to this other one that just blew up.
Exactly.
Of course, you're gonna have this.
Yep.
And then it was, you know, Lawrence was known back in the 80s and even in the 90s to be a place where a lot of arson. I think that was the first thing, was this an arson thing. That was Columbia's way of spinning it. It might have been the...
I never heard that either. Whoa,
boy. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. When you talk to people that actually live there, it's different from what they report.
What it really is, it's deregulation of utilities. It's greedy companies that don't want to spend the money for safety or labor.
It was the way the media portrayed it. There was no, in another country,
truth never came out.
They'd be already in you know, being persecuted. Why did you do this? You know, in Europe, that would not happen.
I heard some anti-Columbia gas rhetoric at the beginning. Then they pulled back from it because they wanted to keep this.
One of the mayors or guys that was because of the big Dominican population there, he, and in the beginning in Spanish, in the Spanish, you know, network, he was against, well, you know, Colombia and criticizing, and then they tamed him.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, blah 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 blah, 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 blah. You know, so all of a sudden he's like, wait a minute, last interview you were criticizing him, and now it's like, yeah, obviously they paid you off and they got you, you know, on the leash.
Yep, and Colombian Gas says, we'll have everything fixed by November 13th or something like that. Where's this arbitrary date come from? You spend more money, hire more people, and you can have it fixed November 1st or October, whatever. Or forget you. Let's make this a public utility.
Nationalize it
with on a state level, if necessary, national level even, and then have all the help you need to come in and fix it overnight. You know, in one day, 2 days.
Remember when it was Edison? Remember?
That's what I'm talking about.
It was all one.
That's what I'm talking about.
They all came out. Things didn't shut down weeks and weeks on end. Things got done right away.
There's some Americans that, if they think about it clearly,
and this is the 80s.
They will remember
the 80s.
People living in America. Yeah, remember the 80s, 70s, 60s, where you still had a company, right? Like it would be AT&T for phones or Edison for electricity. You still had companies, but they were heavily regulated. And then on top of that, you had places where there weren't companies. There was municipal utilities, more so than now. And it all added up to low phone rates at the time, low electrical rates. Now, I can hear people saying, but they didn't have cell phones. Well, so what?
You had telephones everywhere.
Yeah, you had telephones, yeah. Now you have cell phones. And so, I know. They try to talk to people that so-called millennials or younger about pay phones and shit.
There's one in Copley Square. I swear to God, I mean, we go right into Copley. Yeah. And, like, there's a phone right there. What is that? It's a relic from the 80s, from like 20.
You know that happened to me like way back in the 90s. Like 1 year, I was in Boston Common for something, and then the next year I was there. I was trying to see this like free Shakespeare thing, trying to meet up with some people to go see that. I'm like, oh, I'll just go call them and see what's going on. And I went to the payphone and they were all gone. They used to have like 50 payphones in a row. Not 50, but like 20 in a row in Boston Common. They were all gone. Every last one of them was gone. This is back in the 90s. I'm like, why'd you do that? You know, like, I still am using this thing. And of course, I knew cell phones were coming in, but I'm like, you know, I don't have one yet. By the way, I still know some people without a cell phone, and I salute you. But what I want to say about is that it doesn't matter if it's cell phones or landlines. You can regulate it. You can say no. This is now a thing that everybody needs, and you cannot charge this much money. You know, and when people get fooled, they're like, oh, but wait a minute. Let's say airlines got deregulated in 1978, prices went down. Well, actually, people have studied that clearly. Not just the propaganda that the corporate media feeds you, but they've studied it. Prices are not lower. Prices are higher for airfares than they were when it was regulated. Then they say, well, there's more airlines.
And no more food.
What?
The food is not included.
Oh, yeah.
And on America, I'm sorry, let me
food
phrase.
Food not included.
Just on American lines, not
a lot of
international.
Them.
You get on the Aer Lingus, Lufthansa, SATA,
you still get
they
food?
Got food. Yeah,
I don't know. Like I said, I haven't traveled in a while.
So it has nothing to do. It's just here.
Yeah, I haven't traveled in a while. So, you know, you lose all these things.
You can buy the food if you want. Look at the menu.
Yeah.
Slide your little card there. Bleep, and that's it.
Part of deregulation is paying for every last thing, and it's so arbitrary and so foolish that you can turn anything into a fee. You know, you can turn, well, someday they'll turn breathing into a fee if we let the capitalists go crazy.
That's what came up with a series called Air.
Yeah. I know. I think I wanted to see that. I really did. But so what we're talking about here in Lawrence with this gas company blowing up houses, killing people. I think two people were killed, or at least one I know of.
One and a couple
injuries.
Injured.
Yeah. And then saying to people, oh, sorry, and they're supposedly giving them money and stuff, or even relocating them. But I wonder how that's really working, because and even free transportation or whatever, in some places, the state I think is involved with this as well, and yet you sit there and wonder, is that really really going?
And the other one that got me was Columbia said, oh no, oh you know those increases that we were going to last, next month.
They still want them, man.
No,
they don't.
It's canceled. Leave it alone. I'm like. They're so trying not to get sued here.
Well, you know what's going on though. Right next to them, other companies are still appealing for increases, and utility companies. I think they got them. I think they got them. Yeah, Eversource.
They were scarce.
Probably National Grid and other areas and stuff like that. Eversource power was going down like 3-4 times over the summer. That's become a regular thing now because they want to be private, but they don't want to spend the money once they're private to keep the infrastructure going. So when Edison was a heavy regulated utility, the infrastructure was a lot better because they didn't have this model of making the way a private corporation has of completely like increasing profits every quarter. Rate of profit, aggregate profit, everything go up, 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 up. No, if you're heavily regulated, you're what you're allowed to rake in for profits is a lot lower, or slower. Let's say in terms of rate of profit.
And
they still made profit.
They still made money.
Yeah,
they still had big salaries. Everybody got paid.
They still had big salaries for the bosses.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it wasn't perfect. The regulation under capitalism is far from perfect, and it's usually temporary. It's usually going to be under attack very quickly, and it is. But the point is that we're suffering from that, from stuff that started under the Carter administration, or restarted under the Carter administration in the late 80s. When was Carter? Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Late 70s. Sorry. And Kennedy, the big liberal Ted Kennedy, and Paul Tsongas, they were a big part of the charge on deregulation. See, the Democratic Party is there as the shock troops with a smiley face, you know? You know, Republicans, a lot of people understand what the Republican agenda is. And if you look at the country, in terms of who registers Republican, I think it's down to like 32% or 29%. It's pretty low, right?
What do you mean? Like
that registered
dropped?
Republican. Well, it's just low. It's just pretty low. And
so
I don't know if it's dropped or not.
32% of the country's
don't
Republican.
Quote me. I have to double check that. But I'm doing research lately. And in terms of like actual registered blah blahs, whether you're Republican or Democrat, it's lower than you think. Much lower. And independence is higher than you think. And it's growing. And that's a good sign, possibly, for a workers' party and for socialism. And but what my point I'm trying to make is that some of the worst things that we're suffering under come from the actual initiation and or willing, being willing accomplices in with the Republicans or they're initiated by the Democrats. And And they don't go out of their way ever to try to change something that's been, you know, taken off the table. So all those things that are problems, you know, I don't see that, you know, Democrats aren't out. Hey, we forgot about daycare. We forgot about childcare. Oh, we forgot about elder care. Remember how the somehow, and I've tried to research this and not gotten very far because of time and maybe ineptitude. I don't know, but tried to research deregulation of elder care, deregulation of nursing homes, for example. You hear those ads on TV or radio, come to this law firm. They don't, and how, God knows how much you pay. It's probably thousands of dollars. Set up a trust fund. So when your elderly person, your father or you or somebody or your wife or whatever, your aunt or somebody, when they go into a nursing home, they're not going to get charged like $14,000 or $15,000 a month for nursing home care. Now, doesn't anyone ever say, wait a minute, I was alive in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and nursing homes were all over the place. There were a lot of them, and they were run by the cities, a lot of them. And they weren't, and you didn't hear about them costing anywhere near that. I mean, that wipes out the average American's everything. You know, $14,000 a month. I mean, you're just gone. Your life savings are gone very, very quickly. And unless you go to this high priced lawyer plan 5 years in advance, it gets very complicated. Blah blah blah. So there's some weird, nasty, greedy stuff going on with elder care in this country, along with everything to do with healthcare. So like pharmaceutical prices. Like my son knows this family they have good jobs and stuff, but the cost of their daughter's insulin has gone up to like $2,000 per, I don't know what the period is, but it's like month or something ridiculous, you know, or maybe it's, I don't know. I have to double check. So it's all this, like this pressure, and look at, higher education, student debt. You hear a lot more about it now. It's trillions of dollars. Everyone's going into debt to go to college if they want to. But you don't hear any, you know, you hear like, oh, maybe free public college. Maybe some places have implemented that in a small way. But where's the general, like, forgiveness of student debt? You know, make education free, a whole new system. Anyway, and yesterday I was watching, I don't know if it was a fiction or nonfiction thing. I can't remember. I think it might have been a fiction thing, a drama. And they talked about the federal government. There was going to be a crisis of the banks. It was a fiction thing. Crisis of the banks, and that would affect the federal government, and a federal government that wouldn't be able to pay out for like education. And I laughed out loud because the last time I did research on the amount of money the federal government gives to public education, you know what it was?
5%?
8%. Very good. 8% of the total budget of public education in the United States for the federal government is whopping 8% last time I checked. Double check my figures. Again, I don't have time. I'm not a full-time researcher. I have a full-time job, a family, doing a lot of political work, you know. But 8% is what I found. Then the states provide some money, obviously, through taxation, which is very unfair. It creates a very unequal, almost an apartheid education system. So anyways, the point is, it might seem like I'm rambling to people, but what I'm trying to do is connect the dots. I'm trying to say there's a lot of things out there that aren't being touched by movements. The Democratic Party, of course, is fine with the status quo on that. They'll fight on other things, maybe a little bit, social issues or whatever. But even like on Kavanaugh in the Supreme Court, right? There were mass protests, which was great, against Kavanaugh being made the Supreme Court judge. And yet, Democratic Party always kind of, even though they dominated some of these protests, they would always pull back on tactics. See, there's this real problem with youth and well-meaning progressives and so on going into the Democratic Party, getting involved in that stuff, because you got to understand, Democratic Party is not into building mass movements. They don't want to lose control of the situation. They don't want people to put their energies into, you know, being on the street. When they can put their energies into Democratic Party political campaigns, the Democratic Party elites see everything in terms of legislation. You know, if we just pass this bill, which will be watered down, it'll be something the Republicans kind of like too, or whatever. They, you know, the minute you enter that realm of political of politics, you're sort of disarmed. You're sort of made weak because you're not on the street anymore, you're not forming political alternatives, you're not organizing unions, you're not doing all this stuff that takes up energy and time and resources. No, you're putting that energy, time, resources into getting one individual that you think is progressive or something elected through the Democratic Party, which is completely not progressive, completely corporate run, And that's what you're putting your energies
and
into.
And not Democratic either.
Yeah. No, not at all. And you can't even be a member of the Democratic Party. All you can do is register to vote for it, and that doesn't mean anything really. It's an electoral machine that just, you know, shuts down and reopens and shuts down and reopens. So basically, you have the situation where the Democrats, they didn't like Kavanaugh. That was clear. But they didn't lead a mass movement on the streets. And when there was one, when there was protest, not a mass movement, when there was protest, I know from direct hearing directly from people involved, like in Boston, that they made a they really like wouldn't like, for example, someone from Socialist Alternative was really pressured and had their speech vetted, and you know, you can't say that, you can't say this, can't criticize the Democrats, you know, at this rally against Kavanaugh. That was what they cared about most. This is like people from liberals from like Planned Parenthood and NARAL and stuff like that. The ones that kind of run the show on some of these big marches that are really just Democratic Party operatives and NGO types that operate for the Democratic Party as well. They didn't take the Kavanaugh protests, you know, into civil disobedience, into Occupy, you know, that sort of thing. There were some protests like that in the Capitol, but they were small. You know, there were hundreds. You know, Democratic Party, with its so-called voter base, could potentially initiate and mobilize mass movements around this. They don't. Not even Sanders. Sanders talks a good game. He says, hey, sometimes he says, it's not me. It's the movements out there that matter. But then he doesn't spend his time out in the street mobilizing, helping to mobilize, helping to organize, creating new organizations, creating a new political party for workers and youth. Instead, he spends his time, hey, we'll reform the Democratic Party. We'll change the Democratic Party. Look at this piece of legislation over here. Look at these big, rich people I have to deal with, lobby and stuff. Help me do that, you know, that kind of thing. And now he's praising Bezos because Bezos and Amazon raised their starting wage supposedly to $15 an hour. Here's a few fun facts about that. Double check these, but this is what I've read and heard. A lot of Amazon workers are subcontractors and will not be getting the $15. Now, maybe that's not true, but that's what I've heard. This Whole Foods is run by Amazon now, too. Bring back some memories, right?
And I don't want them. I can't go back now. I'm in a different...
Don't go back.
I'm institutional.
Don't go back. And then there's...
I got more rights now, even though it's not unionized, but I have so much more rights.
Yeah. Well, you're close to union. You're close to other unions, but yeah.
But there's a lot of potential.
I hope so.
For the nurses.
Yeah. They should be in the M&A already. Yeah,
that whole, you know, on the question.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that if we have time. But question one, in Massachusetts, vote yes for safe patient limits.
Yep.
Safe nursing
they
limits.
They had a big rally the other day about that. Like a big, you know, picketing and stuff.
Where?
Bringing women. I mean, the nurses. Amongst the nurses.
Great.
Yeah, because the doctors, higher-ups, they love that. You know, say no on number, you know. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
You can see the difference, you know, the nurses versus the people that actually do the grunt work versus the guy who just, here's a prescription and that's it.
I would bet, though, there's some doctors supporting it. I hope so.
Some, but not all.
Oh, that's ridiculous. If I was a doctor,
higher ups and support it 100%.
It means better medical care, but we'll get into that in a second. But the thing with, what were we talking about before the nurses?
Amazon
thing?
And home.
Yeah, Amazon.
Check.
Yeah, the other thing I heard was that there was two benefits that Amazon workers had prior to Bezos announcing going to 15, and they're going to lose those benefits. The 15 might not go to a lot of the workers that aren't classed properly, quote unquote. They're subcontracted or whatever. So the whole thing is filled with holes. But then Sanders is like, oh yeah, you know, I criticized them, and now this is just really great, and it's blah blah blah. No. There's people out there that have been fighting for years for 15. Sanders came to the 15 thing late in his campaign. You know, when he started campaign in 2016. He or 2015 into 2016, he then started talking about $15 an hour. Before that, he didn't talk about it, and it was already up and running since like 2013 or 12 or something like that. You know, we got the Socialist Alternative led the fight for $15 an hour and successfully won it in Seattle, Washington, the first city in the country that did it, and that was what, 2013?
Yep.
Yeah, something like that. And so, you know. You know, the Democrats, at the end of the day, they're going to praise the system. They're going to, you know, find the nice rich people versus the bad rich people, which is when we're talking about politics, that's an illusion. And there's just, you know, you get down to here in Massachusetts, there's the thing with the utilities. They only go so far. But there's something else that popped into my head that the Democrats recently just really didn't do anything on. Can't remember what it was. Well, the referendums themselves show a lack of the like question one. It shows the Democrats didn't want to do anything, passing legislation about safe staffing levels or anything like that. By the way, I think we're going to take a quick break because not because of our earlier engineering problem, which we solved, yay, but because Diego needs to get some water. I think. I don't know if you noticed his voice is a little scraggly.
Yeah.
But
working
also
in a hospital, everybody's getting sick now.
Exactly. Also, though, I have to we have to do a public service announcement and get that ready really quick. So we're gonna play some more music here. This is from Tom Morello, The Night Watchman. Came out a few years ago, maybe more than a few years ago. Came out
actually
a long time ago.
Actually came out in 2011 during the occupation.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah, during occupation, exactly.
Because we were listening to that during our
So let's bring that back. Let's bring that back to which song, though? Did any of these ring a bell if you were listening to it? Which one should we put on?
Oh, my God. So many Worldwide Rebels songs.
Ah, good choice. I was going to take that. What number is it?
It is number 11.
All right, let's try that. We'll be right back. You're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio at WMFO.org. I'll go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook as well, and we'll be right back after some music.
Of London town, where there's voices raised and barricades. Believe me, man, I'm down. Tyrants, bloodsuckers, and bagmen got us picking through the crumbs. Raise your voices all together. Motherfucker, here we come!
Worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long.
Slums in Korea, open fire with a guitar, bass, and drums. Down in Gaza, down in Fresno, out your door and down your street. Are you gonna stand around, or are you gonna be free?
Worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. And it's pulling in today. We won't be coming home tonight, love. The fight has just begun. Raise your voices all together, motherfucker.
Worldwide Rebel Songs by Tom Morello from his album Tom Morello The Night Watchman. That was a quick musical interlude so we could regroup here and do some things we need to do and there's still need doing. So we're going to, after our public service announcement, we're going to get into some things happening somewhat locally, in terms of Greater Boston or whatever and beyond. And then we're going to go back to some discussion. First thing is, as you may have noticed if you're from the Boston area, there's a big hotel worker strike. I'm not sure if it's still happening, which I should know, and I don't. I apologize. I'm extremely busy lately with politics and family, and had to keep my sort of head focus on certain things. Do you know if it's still happening, Diego? Have you heard the hotel worker strike?
I think it's still happening.
I think so too, but I don't know for sure. But let me just say, I did see a report from members of Socialist Alternative that went out there, and I'll just mention a few things. It's hotel worker strike in Boston. They're striking the Marriott hotels, I think. Although here, the report here says...
they've been way overdue, the Marriott.
Yeah, but this one said, this report I'm reading says someone that went, some members of Social Alternative that went to the Copley Weston Hotel, where, quote, workers are on strike for better health benefits, job security, steady hours, and better pay. The signs I've seen are, and I'm sorry I haven't made it to the picket line yet, but the signs I've seen are one job should be enough, which I thought was really clever and kind of gets the point home. As part of a national campaign that Unite Here, the union representing many hotel workers, has launched and is in a continuation of hotel strikes in Chicago last month. Today was the first, at the time of this, this was Thursday, it was the first day of the Boston strike and over 1,500 workers on strike. High energy level. Workers get up very early in the morning to start these pickets, and they start to strike. And the hotel that this these members were in front of was completely shut down except for the front desk. And there were a lot of people checking out because of the strike. Now, Diego and I were talking off air. We have a little news for people listening. As you might know, if you're from this area around Boston and you're following sports, that the Red Sox are in the playoffs. And they're playing against the Yankees. And so there's a huge rivalry. People in Boston hate the Yankees. People in New York hate the Red Sox and yada, yada. And, you know, I buy into that a certain amount. I don't like the Yankees either. But but guess what? Now I really hate the Yankees. They crossed the picket line at one of the hotels that was on strike in Boston. These are guys, this is an organization, a company, a corporation making tons of money, the Yankee Corporation, as part of Major League Baseball, making tons of money. The players themselves get paid a lot of money. Well, not as much as they should in some ways, but they get paid a lot of money. And they cross the picket line of a hotel strike. What? And plus the players are in a union. You can't go somewhere else? You have to go somewhere else. I wouldn't do that. I just wouldn't do it. I would never do it, you know? And they did it. I saw pictures in the Globe. So the Yankees crossed the picket line. So, you know, forget the Yankees, man. We need to roll over them in the playoffs. But also, we should, like, make, you know, boycott them. And
well, Boston's probably done the same thing in other cities.
Doesn't matter. Then they're wrong. The boycott the Sox, you know.
I mean, they probably all do
it. I know people that obey picket lines, you know. I know the Teamsters, you know, they come across the picket line. They don't drive their trucks through most of the time. Almost all the time. Anyway, the hotel says, you can imagine in Boston, they're exploring the labor mostly of immigrant workers and people of color, relatively low pay. The workers on the picket line are very charged up, a lot of anti-Trump stuff going on, which is great. Members of Social Alternative and others that showed up to show solidarity were welcomed by the picketers. So if the strike is still happening, and I think it's going to be, if it is happening, it's probably all day from like 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. at 7 hotels, Aloft Boston, the Seaport District, the Element in Boston, the Seaport District, the Ritz-Carlton in Boston, the Sheraton in Boston, the W Hotel in Boston, the Westin Boston Waterfront, and Westin Copley Place. Those are all names of hotels in Boston that are on strike and by Unite Here workers, unionized workers. And you should go and show your solidarity. You know, it can, I've been on tons of picket lines, so I'm used to it, but it can be a little intimidating. You know, you show up, you don't know the workers. What you can do is say, hi, I'm here to show support. See how they react. And usually it's really good.
Yeah.
And they'll probably point you to a leader that's the picket line, a shop steward or somebody. And how would we say that in Spanish? Hola, estoy aquí para...
Soy socialista.
I'm a socialist.
Viva la lucha.
La lucha continua. So what do you say? How do you say, I'm here to show support? I really don't know how to say that. Solidaridad.
Estoy aquí para la solidaridad y support. Soporto de
yeah.
el trabajador.
Yeah.
The worker.
I don't even know how to say it in Portuguese either. In French,